Good evening, everyone. I'm happy to be here with you all. Having not been here last week, was doing something else last week, a retreat, so I was not giving a Dharma talk at this time, but we were having a circle at this time. Every night we had a circle during our retreat, and which is a good practice of opening to the differences and opening to what we share and concentrating more. Putting our attention, let's say, on more on the bonds that unite us rather than the opinions or the particularities that separate us. All of our practice is about that, but the circle is particularly about that because each one shares with their voice from their experience of that moment. And it's very different from what I share or for what someone else shares, what I experience, what someone else experiences. And yet, just by opening our hearts and not judging, we hear so much that resonates and that we say, oh, yes, I can relate to that, or I understand that, or we feel the emotion, we recognize the emotion the person is expressing. And it's a very powerful practice, very simple, but powerful. And there were people in the group who had never done it before, and people who had done it. So then we have another duality. I know how to do it. I know what it's about. I know what to expect. I've never done it. I have no idea how to do it. I don't know what to expect. And yet we come together with what the bonds that unite us instead of the differences. And I say this because like all of you, I'm sure, I'm very concerned and affected by what's happening in Israel and in Gaza. And looking at it from, we could say from a Dharma perspective or from a practice, from our practice experience. We could wish that all of those people had a practice like ours so that this would not be happening like that. At the same time, we can see how this what is happening there happens all the time in our lives and within ourselves. For, whatever reason, we focus on the differences rather than on the what we share. And there's the example of, well, there's a lot of examples in the story in Israel and Gaza, but when there was a hospital that was bombed. We all heard about this, a hospital in Gaza that was bombed. And very quickly, competing stories emerged, pointing the blame. So one side said it's Israel who did it, the other side said it's the Palestinians who did it, it's Hamas who did it, it's Hezbollah who did it. Instead of saying, oh, okay, this hospital has been bombed. Let's come together and do something to put it back together again so that these people can be treated and so that we don't add more devastation to devastation. Right? But as we see, as we know for ourselves, we can imagine those people on both, the people who were attacked by Hamas and the people who were attacked by the Israeli army, we can imagine their fear, their pain, their suffering, their horror. And we know what that feels like. And we have the option of reacting with anger, hate, revenge, often we think that what happens is that when we are harmed, we want the other person to be harmed like we were, and even more. So, you know, if someone throws a rock at me, I want to throw a rock back, and I maybe even want to throw three rocks back so that they will feel like I felt, and worse. And yet we know from our practice that when we harm others, we harm ourselves. We know this from experientially, if we really look into it. And even if we don't experientially know that, you've heard that over and over again, that we suffer because of our attachment to ourself, and that is what leads us to my position, my territory, my family, my books, my house, my whatever, my. And from then we will reject what is not my, what is not mine, or is not me, and cause more suffering that way. And someone, actually, the woman who I've mentioned recently in recent weeks, Bernie Glassman's widow, who I mentioned a few weeks ago about her story about her nephew who was in the army and started singing with the Palestinians who he was supposed to be taking care of, and that story. Well, she told a story yesterday about how she, her sister and her brother live in Israel, and her nephews are all in the army. Have they all been called into the army? And she was talking, and her parents lived in Israel and were survivors of the Holocaust. Her mother was in Auschwitz. And so she told her sister that she was feeling worse than ever about this story, more torn than ever about the story. And her sister said, why? And she said, because what the Israeli army is doing by this incredible might, military might and power, and their actions in Gaza, they're losing. And then she added, if only Israel is losing, if only its soul. That by acting out of this blind desire for revenge, of really blind, striking out blindly with hate and violence, it's losing whatever potential it had to make peace. And someone pointed out that many of these people in these kibbutz that were attacked were lifelong peace activists, and that that someone, a relative of one of them, who's French, said, you know, Hamas did not choose that target by accident, because it's absolutely unacceptable for them, peace for Hamas. And so it's as if they are luring the Israeli army into continuing the fight. They didn't have to do very much to lure the army, because the army's been continuing the fight endlessly anyway. But all of this is just such a glaring example of how violence breeds violence, and that when we respond from a place of revenge and doing harm, we will only do more harm to ourselves. And inflict harm on others. And then we miss, because we're so concentrated on what divides us, we miss the power and the dynamics that we could raise by working together. We see that in our communities, in our Zen communities, in our Zen retreats. When we all work together, we can do so many things. In our writing workshop, there were moments when we did a collective reading. So we all wrote about the same day or something, and then so everyone read that day. And then we had the next day, and everybody read the next day. Or we had one about, you know, the hour. So we went around and everybody said it, the hour of this, the hour of that, the hour of this. And that collective dynamic is so powerful and so beautiful. The one voice, the one body that is formed by that. And we have so many challenges in the world that we can't overcome them and resolve them by focusing on our divisions. Not only do the divisions destroy, because as we see, so the kibbutzes were demolished and people were massacred, and now Gaza is demolished and people are massacred. So what? What for? What for, really? I'm not saying so what that people suffered and died. I'm saying, what is the point of that? We know what the point is. People want revenge. They're acting from hate. So people feel aggrieved. And so then they strike out and ask and want revenge. We know that. And we know that the circle then just spirals higher and higher and higher and higher. Wider and wider. And it's painful to watch. It's disturbing, deeply disturbing to see, because it's difficult to see how in that particular situation things can be resolved. It's as if there's almost a point of no return in the Israeli army's aggression now. Someone said recently that the Israeli army, instead of going in and saying, we're just going to bomb the shit out of Hamas and kill everything in sight around, a possibility would have been to say, okay, we want our hostages back. And we will take actions to get our hostages back. and we will negotiate to get our hostages back. But in exchange for that, we will stop the settlements, the expansion of the settlements, and we will ask for a responsible Palestinian negotiator. Hamas would have been defeated by that, because that's not what Hamas wants, right? They don't want peace. They don't want nonviolence. Of course, this is a fantasy because it wouldn't happen. The current Israeli government would never say that and would never pull back on the colonies and would never want to talk to a Palestinian negotiator. So, but it is a glimpse at, so there are things that could happen, right? If we come from a place of what we share and not what divides us. I think, again, I come back to the writing workshop because that's what I was doing all last week. Debbie was there. She knows this too. The whole week is like an unfolding of differences. Everybody's writing different things so differently, with different pens, different paper, different words, different subjects, even though everybody has the same instruction. And yet everyone does it in their own way. And the abundance of that and the blossoming of the hearts that open with that process is absolutely fabulous. And it's a bit perfect example of not focusing on the differences, but focusing on what we share. People who didn't know each other at the beginning of the week, people who don't really know much about each other, apart from what they learned through the workshop, we all know this. This happens in our retreats. This happens all the time in the practice. So then what do we do with that? How do we... How does that apply to my life? I'm not in Israel. I'm not in Gaza. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Palestinian. And yet, you know, some of the things are so, it's so obvious. And I'm, you know, some of the people whose families died and who were killed in the kibbutz, you know, have said, they really don't want the Israeli army to be doing what they're doing in their name. You know, please don't do that. They're calling for a ceasefire. And the families of the hostages too are saying, they're getting more worried as the days goes on, because they feel as if their families are not, that's not the primary concern. And we can feel that. We can feel their hearts. We can also feel the absolute, when we lose contact with ourselves and with the other, We know we can go into a blind rage. Even if it's not, you know, getting in a tank and or dropping bombs, but we know what that feels like when we feel we've been wronged, when we feel that there's right and wrong. And so then that has a difference in how we move in the world again, you know. And we know that this practice is about removing all the ideas and the concepts, everything that veils what is here right now. And I know it sounds conceptual, but there's a line from a Leonard Cohen song, which is something like, "We are here so lightly." No, we are so lightly here. It is in love that we are made. It is in love that we disappear. It's so fragile, this life. And it's true, you know, we all were conceived in love. And we will all disappear in love. There's nothing else. And it's so light, it's so fragile. It's so fleeting. Time swiftly passes by, as we say. And to see that the tragedy that arises when we, that our ignorance leads to, you know, when we don't see that, when we don't see the preciousness of the of life, what we're capable of, you know. Because we were all made the same way, and we will all die the same way. Of course, the circumstances are different, the places are different, the people are different. But that's what we share. We have so many koans about this too, huh? About dualities, differences, and you know, Joshu meets the two hermits, and they both raise their fists, and or one is better than the other, or you know, even the distant temple bell, you know, so here and there. Inside, outside, high and low, all of these dualities that we need to acknowledge, but yet, how is it that we become so attached to them that we miss what we share? It's just unfathomable, and yet we know it so well. So maybe I'll open it up there and let anyone else share what they would like to share or say, because I know everyone is feeling things around these issues. So. Or something else, you want to share something else.
Good evening, everyone. Everybody. Yeah. Yesterday I was in a demonstration in Lisbon. Crying for this fire in Gaza. And was for many people. It was raining a lot, and many people at the street. It was very good. Yeah, I'm very also like everybody. I'm very touched for everything. It's in these televisions and radio, and it comes to us from information. But this information, it's in these circumstances are all the time there. It's not yet. It's all the time that these people live this world. Even if they are in silence, even if we don't hear about them, they live this world. And I can't imagine the children that only know this life. They don't know nothing else. I can't imagine how they feel, because they are for me the Hamas. It's not representative from the Palestinian people, oh, and Netanyahu. It's not the whole Israel. They are both people. They want to fight. They don't want to end this war, both. And the civilians, the people, they need to take a position there. I think the Palestinians have no representative, have nobody that's talk for these people that suffer in this time. And also Israel need to have a voice, another voice. I don't see nothing. And when we imagine to do a circle with these two people, it's a big I don't know, big beautiful imagination to take these people who want to do something positive. Something for peace, and to put them together, and the others go. But we can't do that, but because the others are also a part of it. And I don't know, I don't know. I think the Israel is the they need also to have another voice. And the Palestinians also, they don't have voices for peace. They have only voices for war. And it's not new. It's a long story. I had in my life already three Palestinians, to put in my back. I don't know the name. And I know this word from, for me, it's all my life. I hope that it's time to come another something new, I hope.
I'm a bit surprised that nobody has anything to say about this issue with the subject, or maybe it's that it's just too big, or everything's been said. I don't know. But how you feel, or I know.
I think it's just what you said. It's too big and everything has been said. We can repeat things, okay, now that we are here together. But what can I add? Not really great things. Well, it doesn't need to be great things, but I don't have nothing to add to what we already know. But what can I maybe say is that since I from the beginning of my life that I know that are some war, you know, all the 20th century there were wars, and now wars go on, and there are some wars that we know they are going on, and there are no images and no voices and nobody speaks about. For example, there are many examples, but there is another terrible war, for example, in Yemen. There are no news about Yemen. Yemen is, for this moment, is maybe destroyed. So many people died. Nobody knows. Nobody sees in the great media. Nobody speaks about it. And this war is maybe a war that goes on for maybe nearly 20 years or 15 years, maybe. So, and the last time that we already speak about this present war, that what came in my mind is that since I know myself that there is a war going on. There is one that stops and one that begins. Well, that's not a great help, but it's true. So maybe we need to be in war all the time. I don't know. Maybe it's a way to people to relate. It's the war. We also have wars in our houses and in our places where we work. There are wars. So many big and little wars. I don't say by this that it's not important to speak and to be conscious of the cruel acts and all that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's all over.
Yes, absolutely. And it's all over, even in our own hearts. In our own lives. And our path, our practice is about that, is about seeing the root of what causes that and making whole. Putting an end to it, as we say.
But why there are words that we don't know about? This is a big issue. Well, maybe if you analyze, we discover why we don't hear. But there are many that we don't have. Maybe that we know someone who has been in this country, and the maybe the person is in touch with someone, and then in, this person knows about this war. Otherwise, we don't know. And there are children dying, and old people suffering, and houses that are destroyed, and all this cruelty. And we don't know nothing about.
Right. And yet we know it. We maybe don't know the details, but we know that people are killing each other everywhere all the time. People are hurting each other. We're hurting people.
I also think it helps to read, you know, the history, speaking about this present war that we are speaking, I think, now. Some friends gave me some texts to read about the role that, for example, Shimon Peres have developed into the peace of this place in the I mean Palestine and Israel. All he has done with his prime minister that has been murdered, and then afterwards he died. Shimon Peres, he died just afterwards, and then it all the everything that he has done, and he has done a lot. He was the Premio Nobel de Paz, how do you say that? Because of all everything he has done, Shimon Peres. Mm-hmm. Then he died, and the prime minister was shooted, and then everything, all the process was like nothing. This is very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because it's always beginning from zero.
Well, I don't know if it's beginning from zero, but it's continuing, let's say, yeah.
Yes, what I think it helps, it's really to try to read or to hear about the facts, you know, the history, more than, you know, seeing these horrible details. This is not a big help, I think. Thank you.
Risha.
Hi, everyone. Long time no see. I'm glad to be with you. Although the theme now, but thank you. And miss you. I don't know about the war. I don't see that television, so I don't know everything you are talking about. The first war, the first big war, Ukraine Russia, had really impacted on Portuguese lives, on inflation, cereals, construction, distribution, energy, a lot. I think Israeli-Palestinian in economic ways will impact us also. I don't know that much about economy, but it will be something like oil or, don't know, gasoline prices, whatever. And I started to remember also COVID. In COVID, we didn't had this much wars, and somehow helped us to soothe our need of war, as Anna was putting it. Last year, I was in a feminist singing group with Mediterranean women, and the Syria girls were from war, and they speak a lot of that, of not feeling seen because of the fact that the media don't cover that much what they are still living. And there are other wars that seems more important. I don't think it's that the media, I think we all know, are compromised with big groups, and it's difficult to get to the root of what they are. I'm sorry, I don't know the name in English. What are they? What is the story? Whose story are they telling? How? What do they want us to feel or to bend for? To, and I don't know. It's really complicated, and it's affecting all of us directly or indirectly. And it's going to be bad. The Russian-Ukrainian already is. And I don't know, it all, I felt, 45, and it feels like I feel the weight of the world. I'm a grown woman, and it seems like we are passing crisis after crisis. I'm talking about FME being to Portugal, then COVID, then we are again in a big crisis, the world, whatever. Then I see my children that are completely, happy girls and living life as nothing is passing on the world, and I love it. My heart feels full. And I don't know. And when Amy was talking about revenge, I was thinking, personally, not long time ago, myself felt happy with the revenge kind of feeling. But I don't think it was harming someone, and it was not conscious. It was only conscious when the other person said what it felt it. And I think, yeah, you made me felt that when you did that. And the emotion was, oh, what a relief. Like, I was glad for getting to get understand it. It was like I paid in the same coin. I don't know. It felt like a revenge satisfaction. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, but it's true. And I don't know, trying to impact that to world wars. In Europe, you go all the way to German, the first German, and it's awful, awful, awful. I don't know. We as a society, and I don't know, defend too much our power and resources. Yeah, resources gave us power, and in that way we kind of have mine the all of our resources. If I don't know it, this was too basic language, but okay, I'm feeling embarrassed, but thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I can definitely see the individual experience of being blinded by anger, taking sides, thinking or feeling that I am right in order so that the other person may be wrong, or if it's not about me, that person is right in order that I can see that the other one is wrong. I can definitely see all of this in the individual experience, like as persons, as individuals. I this is what I see when, when we're talking about a war. Countries, are we talking about countries? Are we talking about groups? Like doing some now and again, you hear about, oh, this country should do this in this way so that the other country or the other politician or whatever, so it doesn't lose face, so give some space for. Now, this is individual stuff. This is what we think about when we, and we, what, this is what we talk about when we talk about individuals. Of course, the scale is different, but I definitely see that it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing that is happening. Taking sides, wanting people to take sides, not being able to think or to talk about peace, not wanting anyone else to talk about peace, not wanting the other to talk about peace. I remember, yeah. When I was married, having a row with my partner, or or with a friend or whatever, being blinded by rage, you cannot. It's you don't. You want to stay there, and how it is when you. Yeah, I know how it feels when you want, and you are absolutely incapable of getting out of that. It's just rage feeding rage. Just sometimes you can break it, since other times you don't break it. other times you stop it before it comes out. But. I definitely see it. It's the same thing. It's just, of course, it's a bit more complex if we're talking about, well, a bit more, a lot more, if we're talking about countries and societies, and even that, it's not like, I don't know if it was Roshi or someone, like, or Sal maybe, this idea of preventing and making it impossible to talk about peace, to think about peace. Some of the people Hamas killed were was this family. I read this a couple of weeks ago. This family who lived near the border, wife and husband and kids, they had kids. And so they organized this, every year they organize this kite festival. Kites, it's how do you say it in Portuguese? Papagaios de papel, with the peace messages written, and they would do that with Palestinians on the other side, and they were killed. probably they were killed because they were talking about peace and they were thinking about peace and they were cultivating that. And so if two people are arguing very angrily, and if a third person, like a friend, let's just look at try and calm down, and you are so blinded with rage that no, I don't want to calm down. I want to stay like this. It's so relatable. So yeah, in a way, it's exhausted. The subject is exhausted. On the other hand, it's always present and it's always something to look at and to have present. These are my what came up for me.
In all of this, we can see that the seed is always the same. It maybe seems more complex or more simple or has different forms, but the seed is always the same, the attachment to self and not seeing the oneness, seeing only the separateness and not the oneness. And we see where that goes then. We see where that takes us. Oh, dear. Hello, everybody. Russia, I mean, for me, it's really when you say, okay, what is your reaction? For me, it's really, I really feel it's too big, really. And I really feel like I listen to the same, it looks like everybody is like repeating the same things. So for me, I'm kind of, I don't know, I feel very small with that. But I just want to share something that because 2 days ago I saw a documentary about Haut-Karabakh, which is at the frontier between Azerbaijan and Armenia. And it was, it looks the same. It was so weird because the documentary was filming two boys, two young boys, and they was like 10 years old. And there was before a huge bombing by Azerbaijan on the Haut-Karabakh. And the two little boys, and they were talking like adults. They were saying, oh, this is our land, and we won't let them come here. And they was 10 years old, and that was so touching because you could see the seeds. When you're talking about the seeds, they are so young and already they are like fighting for their lands. And what was very touching in this documentary, it was that you follow them for a long time, a very long time, and you see them before, but you see them after the bombing, and you can see the horror, l'horreur, horror. I don't know. Because this is because you have been with them for a long time, and you can see all the people hurted, and and it's not like, because it's really so difficult to read that. Okay, 3,000. I saw today, I'm reading Le Monde every day, and it's like, okay, 3,500 kids have been killed during this for these last days. But it doesn't mean, for me, it doesn't mean nothing. I mean, it means a lot, but it means nothing. But when you follow the documentary and you see the two little boys, they are just two, and you can see how terrible it is after the bombing. I mean, okay, for me it was really, I don't know, I felt that there was Haut-Karabakh, but so it was a different country, but it was like the same story, and it was, you could see the, I mean, what the people are going through. So that is really tough to talk about that. I'm really reading a lot, and but I have really a lot of difficulty to talk about it. You. Yeah. And we see that the seeds continue to be planted, and but or and we can also plant seeds of peace. So it's not just the seeds of war that can be planted, it can be the seeds of peace as well. And there are people who are doing it. I have been in circles with Palestinians and Israelis. I've been in Israel with those groups working together. So I know that that exists. And there. And we're doing what we do because of that too. We sit and we join together and we give life to this practice. Right now we're out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you all for your sharing and for listening.